Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Turn up the radio and sing along. It's time for another great song. This is the Great Song Podcast.
Season's greetings and welcome once again to the Great Song Podcast. I'm Rob Alley.
I am JP Mosier.
And we're here to celebrate the greatest songs in modern music history. We're going to tell you what makes them great, why we think they're awesome, and why you should too. JP, how you doing today, man?
I am doing fantastic. So this is a special episode. We thought throughout this episode we'll find a way to sprinkle in some thanks to our wives who don't listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
Let's just be honest about it. But maybe if we tell them we're doing some stuff where we thank them, maybe they'll give a listen. So y'all may or may not know, but I make the schedule and put a lot of thought into the dates of release dates and stuff like this. And accidentally something happened when we put this one together. It's actually going to be released on the anniversary of me proposing to my wife.
Hey-o.
That just happened to work out accidentally.
Well done.
So happy 12th year anniversary proposal to Kayla. There we go.
That sounds right.
Rob, tell them what song we're covering and kick a little of it and who we're hanging out with or all that stuff.
In honor of our wives, this is You Are the Woman by Firefall.
I saw your face and that's the last I've seen of my heart. It's not so much the things you said to me. It's not the things you do. It's how I feel each time you're close to me. That keeps me close to you.
Hit that chorus one more time.
I saw your face and that's the last I've seen of my heart.
There it is.
Oh, yes.
That is You Are the Woman by Firefall. That is from the 1976 album Firefall by Firefall. It went to number 9 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100, number 8 on the Cashbox chart, number 6 on the Adult Contemporary chart, number 6 in Canada, number 17 in New Zealand. It was the number 79 song for 1976 in Canada, and it was number 35 on the American Top 40 with Casey Kasem in 1977, for all of 1977.
Y'all will know Casey Kasem from the Zach Attack episode of Saved by the Bell, where he talks about Friends Forever. That's how y'all know Casey Kasem.
I was thinking you might know him as playing Robin on the animated 70s Batman and Robin with like when they would interact with Scooby-Doo and stuff era. That was Casey Kasem as Robin. I feel like long ago on the show I tried to do a Casey Kasem and failed miserably.
I was curious if who of us was gonna. I don't feel comfortable enough to try it.
Yeah,
give it a whirl.
No, I can't. I know I can't do it now because I know the last time I tried it I
just bombed,
slipped and fell. But when I was younger I used to listen to the Casey Kasem show every week. And I could do it, but now
does he still do stuff on satellite radio?
He's dead.
Never mind.
Right?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think he's been dead a long
Has
time.
He?
Yeah, yeah.
Do we Mickey Dolenz him, or is he really dead?
Let's see.
Let's look it up.
Hey Siri, when did Casey Kasem die? Oh yeah, 2014. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, he'd been dead for a minute.
So the answer to that is no.
No, unless it's they might do
syndication.
Yeah, you know there are there are channels on Sirius and stuff where they do just reruns of like American Top 40 and stuff like that. So they might. But then you went to was it Rick Dees?
Yeah.
Rick Dees in the Weekly Top 40.
Yes,
there it is. How about it? So we wanted to dedicate this episode to our wives because they have faithfully supported us in this podcast since
Absolutely.
We started it and have been such good sports in letting us devote like time and energy and money
resources,
and you know, all this stuff, you know, to the show and been so cool about it. Even though they don't listen, but their support comes in other ways, right? Their support comes in the way that they like they let us do this.
And Kayla's been helping do the graphics here.
I was
going
to say, so. Yeah, they enable us to do this. Kayla's been helping with graphics and posting, and your living room was decked out in your dining room. Not even your living room.
The kitchen dining room.
Your dining room was decked out in a big, like, Great Song Podcast land.
Yeah.
We record at your kitchen table.
It's we are here at the table right now.
Yeah, so... We just wanted to, you know, as the show is wrapping up, we just wanted to make sure we acknowledge, like, how much we appreciate everything that the ladies of our lives have done to support us in the show.
And we've got a great guest to help us thank them at the end of the episode. So y'all hang around.
Jock Bartley of Firefall. He is the only current founding member of Firefall that is still part of the group. The group is still going.
They're doing the thing.
Yeah, but he is a founding member, and he's not the last surviving founding member, but he is the only founding member of Firefall still part of the group. So he's going to join us, talk about this song and more. This song, part of that lovely, it's one of those things where, like, if it's part of that group where if you turn on Spotify Discovery or, you know, Apple Music Infinity or whatever, when you play this, the next song that you're going to get is probably going to be Dance With Me by Orleans or Poco or something like that, right? It's going to be that. Uh-huh. It's very much in that style, very much of that era. Although I find it funny because to me, I always thought this song was older than I would have told you this was older than like Eagles. I would have told you this was older than, you know, that kind, like Poco and that kind of stuff. I would have put this song in the 60s just because of how simple it is. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but like...
overproduced.
It's not overproduced, and it's not like lyrically, it's not super deep. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into that. And melodically, it's not super deep, but it's so, it just feels like, to me, one of those songs that has always existed.
Yeah.
You were born knowing this song, mm-hmm. right? The first time you heard it, you knew it forever.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that is one of the marks of a great pop song mm-hmm. is how many times do you have to hear it before you can sing it back?
Yeah.
Right? And the answer is one.
Yeah.
One time you can sing this chorus for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
If you hear this song when you're 8, and somebody asks you when you're 75, you ever heard that song, You Are the One? Oh, yeah, you can finish it. Totally, right?
That's good.
It's amazing. And so for those reasons, I just kind of thought that it was older. It had always existed. But it's from the late 70s, like the late middle 70s, which puts it in, you know, right up there as a contemporary of Poco, Eagles, you know, Orleans, mm-hmm. all those, you know, kind of things. Maybe a few listening notes. One thing that we have throughout is flute.
Heavy flute.
Which is a thing that I would, honestly, I know the song is like famous for its flute work. I wouldn't have remembered that.
Same. So like I thought the same thing. Like I remember obviously like you're talking about the chorus, but I didn't remember how heavy the flute was.
It's
driving it.
Saturated. And driving it. The flute's really driving flute. This song.
Here's an interesting fact. The guy that plays flute, we'll talk about him in the Meet the Band section, David Muse, is not even a member of the band. Like, he's just in on this song.
Yeah.
And he's not, like, he does stuff with Firefall, but he's not part of the core of Firefall.
He's not on the bus.
Yeah.
You know, necessarily. So you have this lovely, you know, kind of flute solo bringing us in, and then, you know, throughout. It starts with the chorus. You are the, you know. Which is pretty rare, but it's right away. They're like, what's the hook?
Yeah.
Right? What's the part you're going to remember? They've got you immediately.
Yeah.
Let's start with it, you know. Some great harmonies on the you know, throughout those sort of very like Orleans type harmonies, those like tender, you know, just being boys, just being lads.
Lads being lads.
Yeah, lads being lads harmonies. But I find it interesting that the verses are the sections with heavy harmony and like additional production. The choruses are actually simplified compared to the verses. So let's listen. Let's listen to a verse here.
It's not so much your pretty face I see.
God, nailed that.
Yeah.
It's not the clothes you wear.
You got some like it's more that percussion harmonies, additional production element.
You are the woman that I've always dreamed of.
knew it from the start.
It's just vocal, acoustic, and percussion here. You know what I mean? That's like, it's the chorus is really drier production wise because because it's all about the lyric and melody. Mm-hmm. They're like, let's really put that out front. We don't want to bury it with other stuff.
Yeah.
But the
no
the,
distraction from that.
Yeah, no distraction. Yeah, this is the deal. And it's actually kind of funny because what do you think of as the melody of the chorus? If I said sing the melody.
You are the woman that I've always dreamed of.
I'm not sure about this. I'm just making this take off the cuff. But I think they might only sing it that way the very first time.
How else
because
they
the rest time, the rest of the time they're going, you are the woman that I've always dreamed of. Isn't that weird?
You are the woman that I've... That's the, yeah.
Because listen, this is how they, definitely how they came into the second chorus. And this is the third chorus we're coming into here.
Yeah.
Okay, let's find the next chorus and see.
Okay, that feels like the second part of a chorus, like the repeat.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
You are the love I'm feeling, that's just
the bridge here.
You got a way to set my senses.
This will be the test right here.
Yeah.
The third one.
You smile. Whoa, you are the
ah, then went back to the original. Yeah. Okay, all right. That's really interesting,
so
though.
The
that
second one's
there are
the...
four instances of the chorus. Two of them are one way, two of them are the other way, and it's sandwiched, mm-hmm. right? And you've got, that's really interesting. Okay, you've got a nice doubled split pan guitar solo. Check it out. Okay, so listening through headphones, I'm going to amend what I just said.
Okay.
Because what I said was that was a doubled split pan guitar solo.
Okay.
Meaning that they tracked it twice and played it with each other, split left and right. Listening through headphones, I'm going to say that I think that is a not doubled, but double mic'd guitar solo. I think that was recorded.
Played one time. Two mics.
With either two amps or a microphone on each. You know, if it was a double speaker mm-hmm. cabinet, mm-hmm. maybe a mic on each speaker.
Okay.
And because.
Why do you think that? Is it because it's offset a little bit?
Or? No, it's because it's perfect.
Okay.
And if you were doubling it, there's no way to make it perfect. You can't play the exact same thing. There's some difference either in timing or in your vibrato, you physically can't match that.
And especially
up.
In the 70s, you can't really, there's not as much, you can't shift stuff as easily.
Yeah.
Like there's no Logic or Pro Tools or anything.
Yeah. And it's, and even within that, like if you go in and double something on Pro Tools now and you match up the timing exactly, like there mm-hmm. are tools now that will let you do that, that will let you match up each note timing wise exactly. But you can't match, like if I sang the same note five times and stacked them all up, it would sound chorusy because the vibrato and the tiny, tiny, tiny differences in frequency, you can't match those,
yeah.
right? But so that's what I think. That's what I think this actually is. And it, even if you listen, now we're getting back to the vocals. You know? So what you're hearing on the vocals is probably doubled.
Mm-hmm.
It's got that kind of a chorusy sheen to it. And either it's an effect, but I'm betting it's just he's sang the vocal twice and it's stacked on top of each other. But the guitar solo being so clean,
yeah,
I think it's either double mic'd or we've just kind of got it panned to one side and maybe there's just a reverb effect on the left side. One of those things. So anyway, that's the difference. That's what I think. That's my official take. Let's see. I do think it's funny that the first line of the bridge is, it's hard to tell you all the love I'm feeling. That's just not my style. When clearly it's not that hard.
Because that's what the song is about.
Yeah,
it's not your style. You're just doing nothing but talking about it.
That's right, yeah. Unless he's just really struggling to get it out, right? Yeah. If it's just like, if he passed out after he sang this, okay, I'll give you that.
That's that we've used this joke a lot, but that's the I didn't come prepared to sing at church, and then you dump your purse full of soundtracks out on the counter to pick which one you want to do.
Yes. Oh, man. I wonder, do they do that at churches outside of the South? That's got to be a Southern thing.
It's got to be.
Where it's just like, you know.
Y'all pray for me. I didn't come prepared to sing.
Yeah.
But you know you were hoping that you would get called up.
The kind of churches that you and I grew up in the South, it was not uncommon to just ask somebody if they wanted to sing. Uh-huh. You would be like, before the sermon, choir has already sung or whatever. And they'd be like, you know, Sister Nancy, you got a song on your heart today, you know? Yeah. And they would just say, just come on up here and sing a song for the Lord. Uh-huh. And she would get up and she would say, no, I didn't come, you know. Or sometimes people would even say it if they had. If you asked them on Thursday, you know what I mean? I mean, well, I didn't come. Y'all don't listen to me. Just listen to the words.
But it's in the bulletin. like order of service. Yeah.
I wonder if our church going folks like up north or Canada, wherever you're, you know, England, if I'm guessing in the Anglican church.
Do y'all know what a bulletin is? Like, does that joke even resonate?
Right.
So a bulletin, for those of you who don't know, is a 4-page foldable thing they hand out in church that talks about prayer requests and order of service sometimes.
Yeah. What's going on? When the next breakfast meeting is?
When's the youth cookout?
Yeah. I wonder if that's got to be a Southern thing now that I think about it. Just the random calling on people to sing. That has to be an Appalachian. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like, there's literally churches in our sort of tradition that will walk in with no plan as far as like what they're singing that day.
Yeah.
Right. And they just have people just start calling out hymn numbers.
Uh-huh.
And they'll be like, all right, 333, I'll fly away. You know, like whatever.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, it's so funny. Southern church is its own thing.
Yeah.
It really is its own thing. So Southern, like Baptist, Pentecostal, that style of Southern church is definitely its own thing. Okay, here's the thing that we've never talked about in 6+ years of the show.
Okay.
That happens in this song.
I thought you were going to be like, we're going to talk about shape notes, which are from the church hymnal, the red bag hymnal.
Shape notes.
Here's the thing about shape notes. My mom can read enough music to get through, but like shape notes, she's perfect.
Okay,
like
so
flawless.
Shape notes is in hymnals, and this is not just like our tradition, but in a lot of like traditional hymnals, you'll see shape notes, and it's where you can follow your part of the melody by the shape of the note. So a note head, you know, typically a note head in music notation is an oval, right? It's like a dark oval or just a circle oval with nothing in the middle, depending on how long the note is. Shape notes, though, the different parts of a chord, if you know, for the vocals, one is an oval, one would be a triangle, one would be a square, and I can't remember what the other one would be. But you can just that's how you can keep track of where you are
in
the chord.
You find your shape.
Yeah, just follow the triangle notes, and that's you. And it's really a cool trick for like being able to visually follow. You don't have to know which of these is the alto note. It's which of these is the triangle, and I'm a triangle.
If you're like elementary, just learning, it's a really good intro way to learn. But if you've never learned it, it's weird the first time you look at it.
It's it's kind of a visual solfege, right? Do, re, mi, solfege. Yeah. It's kind of a way to visually, at least, kind of enter in, you know, without having to know everything. Yep. It's really interesting. That was a thing I didn't think we were going to be talking about today.
One thing we've never talked about on 6 years is shape notes. So my mom, I'll tell her to listen to it because she gets a reference too. So
there you go. Come on, Gail. All right. This thing, it may have happened in songs that we've listened to before, but I've never noticed it enough to
dig
into it. Okay. So let's listen to 209. Okay. We're going to listen. If you're listening in headphones, we're listening to the left ear where the percussion is. Okay. And the conga player does something that we're going to talk about.
I've always dreamed of, I knew it.
Did you hear that?
No.
Okay. Listen, you're going to hear a moan. Okay, you're gonna hear a moan sound in your left ear. It's gonna go. Okay.
Whoa, you are the woman that I've always dreamed of. I knew it from
you
the
hear it?
Start.
I don't. I missed
Keep
it
listening.
Again.
I saw.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay. But it's really prominent there because a lot of the stuff is not there.
It
like 209.
Out,
so. One more time.
You are the woman that I've always dreamed of.
Okay. It almost sounds like a note. It sounds like a 6/5 bend on the guitar. It could be almost right. Okay, that is a percussion thing. It is called a moose call.
Okay,
or it's called sort of colloquially a moose call. It is technically called a finger glissando.
Okay.
On the head of a conga. And I can play it for you now a little more prominently. Okay. Here's some. This is from a YouTube channel from Alan Emsley. He's a percussion guy, but check it out. And so what he's doing is hitting it. You know that thing you can do with your cheek where you go?
Yeah. Y'all can hear it. I can visualize it.
I've only learned how to do this as an adult. I can't do it all the time. But anyway, it's basically that, but on a conga. You're striking it, and you kind of gently rub your finger across the skin of the head. And it gives it that like moaning note. Sometimes you'll see people like moisten their fingertip first and that kind of thing. But anyway, it's called a moose call, and it's just a conga move, a percussion player move. Really neat though. People who can, that's pros. Expert level. Yeah. You're not just gonna, I think that probably takes quite a bit of practice to be able to do it, especially consistently. It's happening throughout this, you know, it's happening every two bars on this track. You might be able to do it. You know, I might be able to do it once out of 15 tries, you know, I feel like, but it takes a real pro to do it right. Okay. Let's do something. I've been talking a lot.
No, you're good. You want to hear who did that?
Absolutely.
And let's hear about the other folks who did things.
Hey, let's meet the man. It's time to meet the man. Hey, mama, let's meet the man. Let's all meet the band.
Hey! All right, so let's meet the band that played in Firefall on this track. On bass guitar, Mark Andes. He was in the band Canned Heat, Spirit, all kinds of other groups apart from Firefall.
His mints.
Canned Heat, yeah, the band, not the song by Jamiroquai, which is a great song. Canned Andes mints. I do too. Andes or York Peppermint Patties. Pick Andes, one. Andes. Really? Yeah. I think I go York.
Okay.
Andes mints, for those of y'all that have ever been to an Olive Garden.
There you go.
That's where you get those. Canned Heat does Going Up the Country. Do you know that song?
I don't think
Play so. Play it. I bet you do, because this is a weird vocal hit. I have no clue why he sings the way he does, but it works. So play Going Up the Country by Canned Heat. Actually, and if you've got it, pull it up on YouTube, because I want you to watch the video about minute 140.
Okay.
Because to tie in with flute stuff, flute solo in this song, and the flute player goes crazy.
Okay.
It should be a black and white video.
All right.
I'll come over there and make sure we're looking at the right thing.
This one here?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So play it just to hear a little bit of the song, and then jump ahead to 140 here in a minute. This guy is rocking the flute. And I wonder if it's the same guy, David Muse, but I don't know this.
Well, he's all up in the camera.
Oh, dude. Surely you'll know this song. I feel like it's been on commercials and stuff.
Oh, for sure. That.
How do you find out that you sing like that?
I'm going to some place where I've never been before.
I mean, you know.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
I'm going where the water tastes like wine.
That is a white man singing the blues.
That's it. That's right. And he's like, I want, you're right.
Singing it major as the day is long.
Right. So go to minute 140. There's lots of flute in this song. This is like flute city. 140 through like 156, and watch him just embrace this flute solo. Y'all need to watch along with us. Towards the end, like 156, it's going to be like, what is this guy doing?
Wow. He is getting down.
Dude, he's like bending down. Like, dude.
Wow.
Just like all over the place. It's an electric guitar.
He's in like a twister position.
Yeah.
Like at one point. I'm going to tell you something about that too. And I'm interested now to know who exactly that was. If it's the same guy.
If it's the same guy. Because it's similar.
Because he's playing the flute wrong.
Backwards? Hands backwards?
He's playing with one of his hands backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. So typically when you hold the flute... and I know this because my wife plays the flute.
There you go. Shout out to Crystal.
And one of my sons plays the flute. But it's, that your hands are holding it from opposite sides.
And
he's holding both from the same side.
And I'll teach you the way that I learned how to hold a flute, because I have a friend that plays a flute. And I learned it this way just on my own. She showed me how to do it. Uh-huh. And then picture yourself playing guitar.
Uh-huh.
So like the way you would fret a guitar with your left hand.
Yeah.
If you're holding a pick from the top.
Yes.
That's the way you hold a flute.
If you just move that up to your mouth.
Like if you're playing guitar, move it up to your mouth.
Oh, yeah.
And put your right hand. Oh, yeah. So that's.
Yeah. Dude. So anyway, he's playing it wrong. But obviously it's working for him.
But he's rocking it.
He's self-taught on the flute.
There you go.
This guy that didn't have classical training.
Whoever that guy is. Yeah.
And, it's like those guys that get up to the major leagues with like super weird batting stances.
Yeah.
And you just go, what are you doing? Kevin Youkilis, what are you doing? You know? But it works.
Yeah.
They make it work.
There you go. On electric and acoustic rhythm guitars and vocals, Larry Burnett. He became a disc jockey for 105.9 WCXR. What a great post-rock and roll career for a rock and roller, right?
For sure.
To become a disc jockey. I hear Rick Springfield on 80s on 8 all the time. Mm. He's the guy, and y'all know Rick Springfield.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, I thought that was cool. On drums, and I'm guessing percussion, because that's, I don't know if it's somebody
separate,
else listed. And there's, because there wasn't anybody else listed on here. But Michael Clark. Clark spelled with an E at the end.
Okay.
He was the drummer in the Byrds, died at age 47 of liver failure as a result of alcohol. He joined the Byrds, crazy story, joined the Byrds, but didn't have a drum set. He joined as the drummer with no drum set.
Oh, man, so that sounds like some crap I would pull.
Dude, he'd practice on makeshift cardboard boxes and I guess just borrow drum sets from other gigs, like
for
from
the gigs.
Other people they played with. He's known as a jazz type drummer, but to me, I'd call him more like psychedelic as opposed to jazz.
Okay.
If you want to listen to some of his drum work on the Byrds stuff, go to 8 Miles High is the song, minute 134. I really can't get into the Byrds. I've tried. I mean, turn. That's what it is. Uh-huh. But for the most part, I don't listen to much Byrds. Okay. Do you?
Now, 8 Miles High, that's the song that's referenced in American Pie.
Maybe.
Right? I think we talked about that's a reference to the Byrds.
Oh, when you said American Pie, I immediately went to the movie.
The movie.
Because I just saw the guy that's in Rookie of the Year is also in American Pie. And all of his songs are references to Rookie of the Year, American Pie, different.
Really?
He does, Stacey's Mom has got it going on.
Uh-huh.
He does Stifler's Mom has got it going on and does a remix of that.
Oh, that's really, so he's leaning into
it. He is leaning into it heavily. He's trying to capitalize on
that's
that.
That's awesome.
Which is pretty smart. I guess. And then he sings Henry's Mom Has Got It Going On from Rookie of the Year. Anyway, on acoustic guitar and vocals, Rick Roberts, he was in a band, the Flying Burrito Brothers. I don't know if we've talked about them before, but they have a song called Hot Burrito Number 1.
Okay.
And let's look this up because I want you to hear Hot Burrito Number 1. And there's not a song that sounds anything less like a song that should be called Hot Burrito Number 1 than this one. So picture in your mind, what's Hot Burrito Number 1 going to sound like? It's not this.
All right. From the album The Gilded Palace of Sin, 1969, here's Hot Burrito Number 1. Wow.
Wait till the vocals come in. It's not.
Yeah, that is mistitled.
You may be sweet and
what?
Nice.
It's like. But that is not Hot Burrito Number 1.
No.
Hot Burrito Number 1 is a Satch song.
Yeah.
You know? It's a Joe Satriani flying.
You're right.
It's flying in a blue dream. It's not Flying Burrito Brothers.
Hot Burrito Number 1 should absolutely be a Joe Satriani
song. Anyway, Rick Roberts on piano, clavinet, synthesizer, and the flute guy on this. He also does a little harmonic in there. Not a member of Firefall, but played on this album, David Muse. We talked about him earlier. Died of cancer of 2022, but played with all kinds of folks. Marshall Tucker Band, Boulder County Conspiracy, with our guest, Jock Bartley. That was another band they were in. Former guest and with a friend of the show, Bertie Higgins. For all things Bertie, go back to season 10, episode 11, and hear us talk Key Largo. And then lead electric and slide guitars and some Bigsby palm pedal guitar, Jock Bartley, who we're hanging out with. So hang around to the end, guys, and here's Hang Out with Jock.
Man, that was a great meet the band.
Pretty good, right?
There was a lot going on there.
A lot happening.
That was
Hot Burrito Number 1.
That was rich. The song, going back now to You Are the Woman, it was the lead single. It was the second single from the Firefall album, which, by the way, great album cover.
Yeah.
It looks like a very modern album cover.
Yeah, it does.
I imagine that's a Colorado landscape somewhere. You know, this is all this sound is the Colorado, mm-hmm. like not folk rock. What's the word? What's the word I'm looking for? Like country rock, mm-hmm. kind of, you know.
It's not Southern, but it's because it's not Southern rock.
It's not Southern rock. No, it's this California country rock, Eagles yeah. type, you know, stuff. That canyon, the Laurel Canyon.
Midwest rock.
Yeah. Anyway.
Canyon rock. Southwest I kind of like that.
Canyon rock. There you go. But the first single from the album was called "Livin' Ain't Livin'," which if you're counting, that's three words, three apostrophes. That's a 100% words to apostrophes ratio.
That's awesome. That's great.
But I'll play a little bit about here's "Livin' Ain't Livin'." We're going saxophone.
Here. There it is. That's David Muse playing sax on that.
I mean, that's just beautiful. It's perfect. This is the epitome of that sound.
Yeah.
Now they all come back to haunt me, and the silence seemed to taunt me.
That's great.
Cause they turned the tables round the other way. Living is easy with someone who cares, someone to call you their own.
Okay, so now you listen to "Livin' Ain't Livin'," and you go, I could see that being the same band, yeah. right? If you heard those two songs independently, you could go, I could see that being the same band. But let's listen to track 4 on that album, and you tell me if you would listen to this and go, this is also the band that did "You Are the Woman." Okay, this is track 4. This is called "No Way Out."
Funk.
Yeah, it's like
everywhere, something there in my way.
Yeah, I mean it's almost cameo.
Yeah.
Right? It's almost
sound what I say.
I'll tell you the thing that would help me tie it back in.
Okay.
Is Jock's guitar solo. Playing.
Okay.
It's the sparse lines that he throws in patiently.
Yeah.
Like he waits for gaps and then he'll hit a little right. Line.
Yeah. There you go.
Right there.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, just waiting, hitting his spot.
Yeah. He's picking his moments.
So that's one of the things, and I think we talked with Jock about this, that when this song came up as a thing, when "You Are the Woman" came up as a thing, they were like, it's not exactly right, but we have to do it because it's a hit.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we can't not record that song because it's going to be huge, mm-hmm. right? It's going to be, and they're right, you know what I mean?
That's "There to Be With You" by Mr. Big.
Yes.
It's like, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's the one that, like, people that only know one song of uh-huh. theirs show up to concerts and are pretty surprised
yeah.
by some of the rest uh-huh. of what they do. You know what I mean? Because it's that's a great comparison. If you show up to hear Mr. Big just for.
I'm the one who. And then they come out green 60s, like 10 and 60s, and they like speed metal you in the face.
Yeah.
Like at the beginning. You're like, what is happening?
That's great. Okay, let's see. Rick Roberts, the lead singer who wrote "You Are the Woman," he said originally that he was overthinking the verses. He said that once he realized that it didn't have to be anything deep, the verses just came pretty easy. And the feel and the chorus are really what's, you know, gonna carry the song and the sentiment of it. From Wikipedia, Jock Bartley of Firefall would account for the popularity of "You Are the Woman" thus, quote, "Every female between the ages of 18 and 24 wanted to be the woman portrayed in the song, and that caused their boyfriends and spouses to call radio stations and subsequently flood the airwaves with dedications of the song
and
the sentiment," right? "The message was simple and sincere, and the song was easy to sing. It was like our fans let us be a singing version of the Hallmark card that said what they weren't quite sure what to express." End quote. So there we go. It's like... And it's true. It's, you know, boys expressing their feelings was maybe not as much of a thing yet, you know. And so we were like, let's just let Delilah dedicate it to, you know, to somebody. Did you ever have any...
With Delilah.
The album at the time was the fastest record to hit gold status in the history of Atlantic Records.
Wow, that's impressive.
And I don't know. I assume that record probably, I mean, doesn't stand now, but for sure at the time it was the quickest to hit gold. This is interesting. So the band name itself, Firefall, it sounds like it's going to be a youth group band, right?
Like for the name,
this is definitely the name of the middle school worship team.
Yes, absolutely. The album cover is just red.
Yeah.
Just red to all days. Yes.
But it's not. It comes from an event held at Glacier Point in Yosemite National Park.
Which, if you pause it right there, could still be a youth event.
Sure, yeah. This is the conference.
That's right.
The Firefall Conference at Yosemite, guys.
Yeah, that's right.
Come be with us this year. Israel Houghton's going to be there.
That's right.
You know, who else? Anyway. The event was called the Yosemite Firefall. In the summers, the owners of the Glacier Point Hotel would spill burning embers from the top of Glacier Point to the valley some 3,000 feet down.
That doesn't seem safe.
It does not seem safe, but it created the look of like a fire waterfall.
Yeah.
And so they called it the Firefall. The event started annually in 1872 and lasted almost 100 years before being shut down by the National Park Service in 1968. And not because of the fire hazard.
Not because of safety.
Not because of that, but because the crowds who gathered to see it were trampling the meadows in the park.
Messing up the park.
And because it was a man-made event and not something that was naturally occurring. Yeah. So they were like, you know, this is a national park. Let's keep it. Mm-hmm. We're doing something weird here. So they shut it down in 1968. So crazy. Which was before this. I mean, this was
eight years
before the song came out. But I don't know when, I can't remember when Firefall was formed though, because this was not their first record. Mm-mm. But I have to go back and look. Anyway, let's see. I think I have maybe one or two other things.
I got to Stump the Genius. I got the songs with names in the title.
Okay, let's Stump the Genius, and then we'll get to a couple other things.
All right, perfect.
Stump the Genius, Stump the Genius, Stump the Genius. It's time to Stump the Genius.
Jump up and take your part. I take your part. All right, we're going to play Stump the Genius, songs about fire.
Okay. Okay.
So this is one where I'm cheering for you.
All right.
Just name the artist.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you, I didn't do Fire by U2. I'm pretty sure you would know the artist, but not sure if you know the song. I also didn't do On Fire by Switchfoot. It takes too long to get into the words.
Okay.
Love that. I wasn't sure if you did off the piano intro.
Okay.
Also, couldn't do Crossfire by Stevie Ray Vaughan because it's inside the word.
Okay. So this
only the word fire. It might be fire with something else, but it's fire that stands alone. Okay, so 10 songs.
Okay, and I'm naming the artist.
Naming the artist.
Okay.
6 seconds each, so let's do a minute. Give yourself a minute.
All right, 1 minute.
6 seconds, unless you're feeling really aggressive, I want to try 5 seconds each and do it in 50.
No, let's do it in
Let's do a minute.
Because I'll get hung up on one for sure.
Yes, and pass. If you get stuck, pass.
Okay, yeah, ready and go. Hendrix. Taylor. Springsteen. Pass. Doors. Billy Joel.
You shake my nerves.
Jerry Lee Lewis. Johnny Cash. Van Halen.
Back to this one.
Get back.
And I was over. Oh, I'm good. I got 35 seconds. That's Adele.
There we go.
Boom.
Bam.
Freaking killed it.
Man.
Good. That's amazing.
The bell is hilarious.
The bell's seen better days. Hendrix, James Taylor, Bruce Springsteen, Adele, which you passed and came back to, Doors, Billy Joel, Jerry Lee Lewis, Johnny Cash, Van Halen.
Wow. So that would be
awesome.
See if I can pull all the song titles now.
Okay, Hendrix.
So Adele's set Fire to the Rain.
Yep. Hendrix.
Hendrix is Fire.
Yep. James Taylor.
James Taylor is Fire and Rain.
Yep. Springsteen.
Springsteen is I'm on Fire.
Yep. Doors.
Doors is Come On Baby, Light My Fire.
Light My Fire, yep.
Billy Joel.
Billy Joel's
We Didn't Start the Fire.
Jerry Lee Lewis.
Jerry Lewis is Great Balls of Fire.
Johnny Cash.
And Ring of Fire.
And Van Halen.
And Van Halen is On Fire.
Yep, very good. Nicely done.
All right, fantastic.
Freaking killed it.
That was good.
Fire round.
Yeah, man.
Coming over to you.
Lots of songs about fire. Okay. I just went through a list. We don't have to play these. Just wondering other songs, other famous flute solo songs. Of course, you've got probably the most famous flute thing for our generation.
Titanic.
Oh, well, okay, that's not a flute? Proper flute. No, it's like a penny whistle or okay. it's a flute variant.
Okay.
But it's not like a straight up flute. But it's like a tin whistle or a penny whistle. Yeah, it's like an Irish flute kind of thing. But I would think for our generation, probably the most famous flute is Ron Burgundy.
Yeah, Yaz flute.
The Yaz flute on Anchorman.
Let's go.
And I can't remember, Harlem Shakedown, East Harlem Shakedown, is that what he calls it? I think that's what it is. It's like something Harlem.
He's another one that didn't come prepared to sing, and he pulls the flute out of his sleeve.
That's right. We have...
Aqualung.
That's right. So that would be a reference to Jethro Tull with, Ian Anderson and the flute, flute as part of the Jethro Tull band. They're probably the most famous song with the flute is Living in the Past. The song Aqualung actually is their biggest hit, but doesn't have any flute in it. Yeah. So that would be a reference to Jethro Tull. By the way, I'm sure we talked about this in our Metallica episode way back, but one of the funniest things in history is that Metallica lost the heavy metal Grammy to Jethro Tull back in the day. They were like, and so the next year when they won it, Lars, when he accepted the award, he said, I guess we got to thank Jethro Tull for not putting out an album this year. So let's see. How about California Dreamin' by the Mamas and the Papas? Some really great flute stuff in there. Color My World, Chicago. Yes. Great flute stuff.
Interestingly enough, I've probably shared this in the Chicago episode, but the time that my dad met my mom, the very first time they met, dad is not an accomplished pianist by any stretch, but he can play that. A lot of major seven chords.
Yeah.
And mom sat down beside him and he played Color My World.
There we go.
So that's their song.
I thought you were going to say she sat down beside him and played the flute. Pulled the flute out of her sleeve. Played that solo. Here's an interesting one. And this was weird because when you said interesting story, I was literally about to say interesting. The word. Next word coming out of my mouth was weird. The word interesting. So
that's interesting.
That is interesting. Manfred Mann's song, The Mighty Quinn, which we talked about in our Manfred Mann episode.
With Chris Thompson.
A little bit with Chris Thompson. But the flute solo on that was played by Manfred Mann's bassist at the time, Klaus Voormann, who, in addition to being a musician, also was a graphic designer.
Okay.
He's the guy that did the Beatles' Revolver album cover.
Wow, that's played awesome.
Played the flute and bass in Manfred Mann.
That's awesome.
Isn't that weird?
That's pretty diverse. And his name's Klaus.
Klaus Voormann. That's Voormann, if you're trying to look him up right now. Moondance, Van Morrison.
Yes.
Another flute song. And then maybe I would say probably the most recent.
Have we talked about what a train wreck that song is at the end?
Moondance. No.
We could take it. It's awful. It falls apart after the. It's like it falls apart. So anyway, y'all, next time you're listening through What a Marvelous Night for a Moondance, listen to the train wreck that happens at the end of that song.
That's correct. I would say probably the most recent flautist. Who is part of pop culture is going to be Lizzo, right?
She plays the flute?
Yeah. What?
I didn't know that.
Dude, it's a whole thing.
Yeah?
It's a whole thing. She plays the flute well, and she plays it hilariously.
Okay, now I need to watch that.
Oh, my gosh. So, like, her song, I believe, about Nimbling
Time,
has flute stuff in it, for sure.
In a minute, I'm going to play a little flute solo, really.
There you go, but what you really need to do, though, is watch her. I think it was her first, I don't know if it was Grammys or American Music Awards, but it was like the first time she performed live at a music awards show.
Uh-huh.
You need to go watch it.
Okay.
Because she's all decked out, right? And she's playing the flute in the middle of this thing, and she stops in the middle of a flute solo and just swears into the microphone and then goes right back to the flute. It's absolutely hilarious. And there was a thing, I think it was earlier this year, where she got to play. There is some, like, one of the, I can't remember who it was, like James Madison.
Okay.
Like founding father James Madison had this flute made of crystal. And she got to borrow it from, like, the National Archive or whatever.
I think I remember that story now that you're talking about it.
We might have talked about it on a catch-up episode.
I think so, yeah. That sounds familiar.
And so she got to, like, play it and, you know, whatever. There's a thing I just saw recently on YouTube of her getting to play, I think she was duetting, like, the Pink Panther song with with somebody anyway, yep, in the studio on the flute. You know what I mean? It was cool. It was really cool. So anyway, that's probably our most recent. Okay. So our kids' generation, we go Anchorman. We go Ron Burgundy. Yeah. Our kids are going to go Lizzo as famous flautist.
Parents are going just Mamas and the Papas guy.
Yeah, yes,
and,
right.
And between those generations, it's David Muse of Firefall.
That's right. There you go. Yeah, 100%. 100%. All right, so the last thing I've got is I wanted us to maybe think through, because this episode is dedicated to our wives.
Sure.
My wife's name is Crystal. Your wife's name is Kayla. And so I was like, find your favorite Kayla song.
Sure.
And I'll find my favorite Crystal song.
Sure.
I was disappointed in the amount of Crystal material that I found.
Okay.
Now, there's definitely artists. There's like, sure, Crystal Gayle and whatever, but I'm talking about a song.
There's songs.
With the word in it.
There's only a few that I can think of off the top of my head, mm-hmm, for Crystal. So I'll tell my favorite Crystal, okay, too, just to give you that one.
Okay,
so
yeah. And I'll tell my favorite Kayla.
Okay. I know there was a Elton John one and, yeah, a Fleetwood Mac one, but
On principle, I couldn't go with Fleetwood Mac.
See, I get it. So my favorite Crystal is Crystal Ball by Styx. So
mine too.
Oh!
Mine too. That's what I went with. Crystal Ball by Styx from the album Crystal Ball.
I will love it if your favorite Kayla song is my favorite Kayla song.
All right.
Do you want me to tell you my favorite?
I already told you mine. My favorite Kayla song is Kayla by Flying Colors.
You didn't tell me that.
I didn't tell you?
No, but that's mine.
Dude!
Yeah, that's mine too.
Wow.
Mike Portnoy, Neil Steve Morse. Yeah, so that's awesome. Go to minute 150 if we're going to listen to it. Let's hear... I earmarked which part I would want to hear.
Freaking amazing guitar solo, yes, on the song.
Well, there we go.
The way the chorus comes in,
yeah,
it's like it's in is it 7-4 and then it goes into a 6-8 chorus. Is that right?
Maybe. The other one was I can't take credit for this one. This one wasn't my favorite. Completely different feel. A guy named Steven Sanchez, who actually Micah Talks, who we hung out with, uh-huh, last night, he produced his last album.
Oh.
And they're on, and he's on tour right now with Stephen Day. But he's got a song called Kayla.
Cool. Okay. This song is just beautiful.
This is awesome.
So let's get into it. Hang on. Yeah, we're in 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Just play a little bit of this.
Yeah, I'm good with it.
I'll play a little bit of Crystal Ball. So check out this groove. We're in 7-4.
Mm-hmm.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Then the chorus is going to transition to a 6-8, or you can call it 6-4 if you want to.
I like Casey's voice a lot.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Key change. Just beautiful, right? Okay.
Yeah
let's hit that guitar solo.
I said go to 150.
150.
Because this is a good little transition that would still get you some chorus and some.
Yeah.
I love that hit into the.
Let's hear this guitar solo. This is Steve Morse on the guitar.
And Dave LaRue of Dixie Dregs.
There you go. Yeah. Neil Morse on vocals.
Neil Morse, yeah, playing keys on this one.
Yeah. I don't know who played sitar. I freaking love this song. This guitar solo might be my top 10.
Really?
Of all time. Yeah. Here we go. It's the outside stuff, dude, that gets me on this. And then this ending. Yeah! Bro. That's so good. Just absolutely.
You
got to
love
impressive.
A speed riff that ends with a bend.
Yeah.
Like that's heck like, yeah. That's tricky.
Like, what is it? Michael W. Smith, looking for a
place, in this,
place in this world.
I almost wore my Michael W. Smith t-shirt today.
There you go.
I
almost did. All right.
Yeah. And then everybody's, before we play Crystal Ball, everybody's favorite song about Kayla is that Clapton one, right? The where there's an acoustic and electric version. He did it with Derek and the Dominoes. Wrote it for, sure. Wrote it for Patty Harrison. That's it. Yeah, that's
the, absolutely. I was like looking it up. I'm like, what is Clapton, Kayla?
The one that he didn't play when me and Rob saw it with the Wallflowers.
Oh, just wild. Just wild. What if the Wallflowers had played it?
Oh, man.
If they like, Clapton's done. They Wallflowers back, come back and just like, play the worst
the encore,
version of Layla.
That's the yeah. encore is them doing it way fast.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. And then to round it out, I'll play Here's Crystal Ball by Styx. I guess I could have gone Crystal Planet, Joe Satriani, but is there an actual Crystal Planet song?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I guess I could have. That album's not bad.
Yeah, no, it's a good, yeah, yeah.
Love Song's my favorite song off that album, I think. There's a good guitar solo in this. Jump to the middle. Yeah. I don't have it time stamped in front of me, but.
I used to like to walk the straight and narrow line. I used to think that everything was fine.
That's some fun of solo.
Sometimes I'd see a chance to look.
Get to the big, the bigness of it all.
Tell me, won't you tell me, and then tell me again. My heart.
It does get bigger.
So tell me, won't you tell me? I just gotta know.
There it is. Let's find that guitar solo.
It's right there.
Oh, it's right there?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's the keyboard solo.
Synth solo, yeah.
Flute solo.
Flute synth, yeah. There it is. Here.
That gives him time to swap from his 12 string to right. his electric.
Short and sweet. Short and sweet.
Yeah, there's a biggie at the end.
Okay.
But anyway, good stuff.
Yeah.
Dude, what a fun episode. Thank you to our ladies. We both picked the same song of the others. That's good.
That's great. Okay. Yeah. Shouts out to our wives. They're awesome. Thanks to them for, supporting us while we went out and chased something super fun. Right.
And we're not done yet, guys. We got Jock coming.
Yeah. Jock Bartley of Firefall, coming up right after the break. We got a Jock Bartley of Firefall. He's going to join us for a little conversation about the album and the songs, Ben's legacy. And
that's pretty good.
And just go off to, that's how, NPR, DJs snore. Like they breathe in and then coming up after the break.
That's good.
All right. Anyway, we'll be back to tuck you in at the end. But first, let's go talk to Jock Bartley.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we are here with the one and only Jock Bartley of Firefall. Jock, thanks so much for joining us today on the Great Song Podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be with you guys.
Excellent. We're so excited to get to chat with you all the way out in Colorado today. My research, I just keep coming up. We keep talking to guys who are part of that like 70s Colorado songwriting rock community, you know, what was going on at that time in Colorado, you know, that was so special about, I mean, so many just legendary acts of that era. We're part of that Colorado community. Just
yeah.
Tell us a little
well,
about
you know
that.
What's interesting is it started before that. Of course, out in Southern California, the Byrds and the Buffalo Springfield started that whole family tree that included Poco and the Eagles and Graham Parsons and Loggins and Messina and all that kind of stuff. So all those people like Stephen Stills and Richie Furey and Joe Walsh and Glenn Frey and Joni Mitchell and Neil Young and Bernie Ledden. moved out to LA and invented folk rock and then country rock, you know? And what a lot of people don't know is in the early to mid 70s, a lot of the rock stars from Los Angeles got sick of living in Los Angeles and moved to the mountains above Boulder, Colorado. And that included Stephen Stills, Chris Hillman, Richie Furey, Carl Wilson of the Beach Boys, Dan Fogelberg, of course, Joe Walsh. So many people moved to the mountains above Boulder. And yeah, you're right. For maybe 4, 5, or 6 years, Boulder was the hot spot of everybody wanting to come and hang or play in Boulder or live in Boulder or visit Boulder. And it was really great. And that's where Firefall got together in 1974. And, you know, Rick Roberts and I put the band together. And Rick Roberts, of course, replaced Gram Parsons and the Flying Breeder Brothers. And, you know, for me, as a fan of Southern California music when I was in high school or college, you know, the Birds and the Buffalo Springfield, to find myself being in bands with three of the Birds was unbelievable. Michael Clark with Firefall, Chris Hillman, we played a lot with him, and I played with Gram Parsons and Emmylou Harris, and it was like, wow.
Yeah, unbelievable. And I should have asked this first off, actually, but Colorado got introduced into the conversation early, but I need to ask, is Jock a given name or a nickname?
It's my middle name, and it was my grandfather's name.
Okay. Oh, awesome. Okay. And it was his given name?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow. That's
awesome. And, you know, I see a few people named like that, and it's an odd name, and you can imagine that I heard everything that I could with the name Jock by the time fifth and sixth grade rolled around. So it's like, you know, but hey, it's my name, baby. Hey, it's my middle name, really. I'm James Jock Bartley, but I've always been called Jock.
I got a question on, so your second album, Lunacy, which is a great play on words, lunacy, by the way, rework of originally titled project Tropical Nights. What kind of pressure comes with a second project following like a massive first album, you know, with top 10 singles? Right. What kind of pressure comes with
that? That is a great, great question. And the truth is after, when we formed the band, you know, and when we put together our first album after we formed, we had like 30 original songs to choose from. And it was easy. We just made the record and wow, it sounds great. And there were hits and it was, you know, some of the best songs. You know, 6 months later, we were due to go back in the studio. And a lot of bands with the sophomore jinx used a lot of their good songs on the first album and, you know, have trouble. And we made an album called Tropical Nights. Song of Rick's called Tropical Nights was kind of the feature of it. And Ahmet Erdogan, the CEO of Atlantic Records, came out to the big playback party in Los Angeles to hear the second Firefall album. And he listened, and we all looked at him when he was done. And he said, this album's not good enough. You guys need to go back in the studio. Rick, take a few months and write a few more songs. And hey, no problem. Go back and let's redo it and make a better second record. And he was absolutely right. Wow. And you know what? I look back, and I won't name any bands, but there were some bands of our time period in the 70s who had huge first albums and then good second albums, but nowhere near the sales or success as their first album. And it's that sophomore jinx where you use all your songs on the first album. We were fortunate. Rick Roberts and Larry Burnett, we had a lot of songs to choose from and filled 3 or 4 albums worth.
You didn't let up steam on the third one. I mean, Elon, the one with Strange Way, that was that your first one to reach platinum? Did I read that right? I know that one went platinum, right? And that was your first of the three to hit platinum. Right.
And it went platinum real quick too, surprisingly. But yeah, Strange Way was a huge song for that. I found out many, many years later that our first album, which went gold faster than any album on Atlantic Records history, which was a surprise to me because the Stones, Aretha Franklin, Led Zeppelin, I mean, the Young Rascals, it's like, Jesus.
That's
we went
home
faster than they did.
Yeah.
But anyway, I heard that when our album, our first album, actually sold over a million copies and went platinum, Atlantic didn't tell us that, and they didn't want to have a band that was going in to renegotiate their record contract have a platinum record. You know, so they kept that gold for a couple of years, and only a couple of decades later, when, you know, I was checking into something else and I called RIAA and I said, hey, can you tell me how many albums Firefall, the first album, sold? And they said, oh, sure. And they looked it up. It took them about 15 seconds. And they said, yeah, I think you sold 1,400,000 and blah, blah, blah. And we went, oh, and it's not platinum. We'll certify it today. You know, so for 30 or 40 years later, we get a platinum record and should have had one a year later.
Wow.
That's crazy.
That's so it's funny because you get, you know, people on our side of the industry who we grow up, you know, playing guitar and writing songs, and how cool would it be to sign a record deal?
Right.
We talked to so many bands that, and artists who at the very least have a kind of a mixed bag experience with labels. What is it? In the end, is being part of that the bigger machine, is it worth it? Is it all it's cracked up to be?
Yeah, if you're on the right side of the worth it part. And Firefall was really lucky because Ahmet Erdogan really liked Firefall and really liked Rick Roberts and thought we were going to be really big, which he helped make us real big. And Atlantic was way behind us. But you know what's interesting? And I saw so many bands that got a record deal and had songs and were hopeful, and the label, you know, many different labels, not just, you know, Atlantic, any label, you know, a lot of the labels would sign acts knowing that they weren't going to be a success, and they wouldn't push them because they needed write-offs for losses against their Bruce Springsteen or something.
Wow.
So, you know, and when I heard that, I went, are you kidding me? And they said, well, yeah. Now, of course, probably some of the albums on those new bands weren't as good as they needed to be, or the label didn't hear that one hit song like they did with Firefall or, you know, other bands that really hit it big. You know, they didn't have a You're Still the One by Orleans or,
right,
you know, one of the, or an Amy by Pure Prairie League, you know, and unfortunately, a lot of bands that had stars in their eyes and were being very hopeful ended up being in that category of the label knew that they weren't going to push them from the start.
Wow. How many 150 interviews we've done over the course of the show, and nobody's ever said that. I've never heard that before. That's mind blowing to me. Wow.
So from 78 to 82, we can just say there's a little bit of a downfall for Firefall. So in 82, you reworked Firefall and put out the Break of Dawn LP, and then
right,
Mirror of the World in 83, which is a little harder edged, which I really like. Was
I
this
like
new
too.
Phase of Firefall, was it fun to navigate or more of an undertaking? Or was it like, this is fun, let's do this, I like this?
It was an undertaking.
Okay.
Because frankly, a lot of the bands in the 70s had acoustic guitars and big three-part harmonies. And when the 80s came around, that went out of fashion big time.
Yeah.
You know, it was disco and, hey, then grunge out of Seattle and stuff. And on a couple of those later Firefall albums, I tried to make us more rock and roll and less that acoustic guitar, just remember I love you kind of thing. You know, and we made a couple albums and some of them were really good and everything, but we didn't have a gold record for the longest time. And then when radio discovered classic rock in the late 80s and 90s, you know, classic rock, you know, because people of my age, you guys are younger, but people of my age didn't have a lot to listen to on the radio in the 80s and early 90s. And so they wanted to hear Steely Dan or Little Feet or Firefall or Dan Fogelberg, you know. And so classic rock, because the radio listening public demanded it, became a big thing. And then suddenly bands like us and all those other bands got airplay again. And, hey, we can go tour some more.
That's interesting. I haven't really, I've never really thought about it that from that perspective, that like for a period of time that that era kind of became passé and it didn't just keep playing on the radio all the time.
Right. Wow. And you know, the truth is that's good. You know, that every 5 or 8 or 10 or 3 years, you know, there's a change in music, popular music. And you can go back to the 40s and the 50s to when, you know, and when, you know, like, for instance, when Elvis Presley and Buddy Holly came out, it was like, whoa, you know, music and popular music went a totally different direction. So, you know, I'm not upset about disco and I like most of grunge and stuff. And it was kind of anti-commercialism, grunge was. But yeah, you know, and a lot of times people then go revisit what they listened to when they were growing up or when in college or something. And we fit right in that.
Firefall is one of those bands who are probably most identified with a song You Are the Woman that doesn't necessarily like represent the full range of what you guys did and who you were as a band.
Right.
And so I know some people say like, I'm just glad to have written something that people want to hear. Some people wear it as kind of a burden. You know, I have to play this song every night because it's what you know, puts butts in seats. So you're laughing, but I'm interested to know where you are in that spectrum.
Well, the truth is I know how incredibly lucky I am to be in a band that has a hit as big as You Are the Woman, you know? And, you know, yeah, it's poppy. And we had probably 8 songs on the first album ready and done, Mexico and Cinderella and all these great songs that were more indicative of what we were at. And then Rick brought in You Are the Woman and we, all the guys in the band kind of went, that doesn't really feel like us, does it? But the producer went, that's going to be a hit. And he was, of course, right. You know, and, you know, I know how lucky we are to have some hits. And what's really cool about Firefall, unlike even some of the other bands of that time frame, there was the AM radio and we had, you know, we had You Are the Woman and Just Remember I Love You and then Strange Way. And then there was FM radio with Mexico and Cinderella and other songs. So we had the best of both worlds. We were getting heavy airplay on both of those formats.
That's great.
That's awesome. One of my favorite analogies that you've given, when you're like, every woman age 18 to 24 wanted to be the woman in that song, and you got to act as like the Hallmark card. I love that analogy. I love that. It was great.
Well, it's true. And you know what? That was the great thing about Rick Roberts and Larry Burnett as our two songwriters, because it was me on lead guitar. It was Mark Andes from Spirit and JoJo Gunn on bass. Michael Clark from the Birds, you know, and we knew how to make records. And the late, great David Muse as our color guy on sax and flute and keyboards and stuff. You know, Rick Roberts, not all of his songs, but many of his songs were written just for those 18 to 25-year-old girls. And he wanted them to call the radio station and request his song, and he'd make a lot of money. You know, and there's nothing really wrong with that.
Can't fault him for that.
No. I mean, when Linda Ronstadt recorded Colorado by the Burrito Brothers, Rick suddenly realized how much money you could make on a hit record, on a hit single. Now, Larry Burnett was the total opposite. Larry, when he wrote a song like Cinderella or some of these songs that he brought to us, was like a purging of his soul. And this song would come out and we'd go, wow, you know. So we had Soft to Hard with Rick Roberts songs and Soft to Hard with Larry Burnett songs. And that's how good our first 3 albums were.
That's awesome. I love that. So you're like the king of the name drop. Like I could list 40 names that you've mentioned. So you toured with Willie Nelson, Doobie Brothers, Skinner, ELO, Fleetwood Mac, all kind of at their peak. If you could tour with one, you get one that you get to tour with at their peak. Who do you pick?
Well, I'm going to pick 2. So sorry.
Fair enough.
It's one for
and
each
we
of us.
We got to tour with both of them.
Okay.
Fleetwood Mac during Rumors.
During Rumors. Yeah. That's freaking awesome. Yeah.
But yeah, playing in front of 50 to 80,000 people a day in stadiums and basketball arenas and everything. Those were really like the most amazing gigs. But one of the, I mean, we opened the last tour that the band did with Robbie Robertson and Levon Helm and Rick Danko and all those guys. And I'll tell you what, we play our 35 or 40 minutes opening act set. And then I would go find my place behind the curtain, and I would be about 15 feet away from behind the curtain watching Levon Helm sing and play drums with Garth Hudson right behind him. And sometimes they had that five-piece Civil War horn section with them. And I mean, the band, the first two albums by the band were two of the best American albums ever recorded.
Yeah. Man, I've just been, so it's funny, I've found myself to have been influenced by a lot of people who were influenced by the band without having ever really dug back into the band. So I'm like just in the last few years, kind of like following those trail of influences back to the source that they started from and getting into Robbie Robertson and into the band. But it's been a lot of fun to get there. And when I listen to them now, I hear so many of these acts that I love their music in, you know, protoplasmic form. It's really great.
And with the Robbie
Protoplasmic, I like that.
Thank you.
Yeah, Rob's our vocab guy. I'm going to use words like and, but with the Robbie news this year, that, I mean, that's really kind of put the band back into the stratosphere. You know, that's kind of re-emerged them in ears that maybe for people that hadn't heard them as much.
So. Right. And, you know, I mean, in the 70s, I was in my mid-20s, and the band were just about to break up. Loggins and Messina had just formed and were going to break up. And we started touring with Fleetwood Mac during the White Album. And they realized that we could play a kick-ass 35 or 40 minute set, whether we got a sound check or not, which a lot of opening acts don't get sound checks. Just plug in and go. And so we got to be one of their favorite opening acts for Rumors Tour, which that was the biggest band in the world then.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Unbelievable. So I just look back at my career and I thank my lucky stars, and I was a really good lead guitar player, but I had to be at the right place at the right time a couple of times to land into these situations.
Speaking of timing, you had a song called Just Remember I Love You and Timothy B. Schmidt is on that song. Was he in Poco at the time, or was he already in Eagles? Okay.
He was in Poco. And in fact, when we cut the first Tropical Nights, Firefall's second album, Just Remember I Love You was on that, but we didn't cut it as good. And it was a little slower, and it was like a little languid. And when we got the, you know, Amit gave us the okay and the budget to go back in and redo part of the second record, we recut Just Remember I Love You a little quicker, because it's not really a slow ballad. It's a mid-tempo kind of, it's cooking along. And, you know, when it came time for the vocals, we were out in L.A. and we said, how about Timothy B. Schmidt? You know, he was famous then for being the great high singer. So he sang all over that record.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, we want to be respectful of your time, Jock. I got a couple more questions. One we ask everybody.
I'm good. I'm doing nothing. I'm done for the day.
Fantastic. Well, we wanted to make sure that you had a chance to talk about your new album, Friends and Family. So I love the way that you split the singing on it between John and Steven, and like the way y'all each do different tracks. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, after Mark Andes retired, and earlier than that, David Muse, our sax flute player, succumbed to cancer and died. That was right before, and the Friends and Family album was kind of a lot about Mark Andes, because he was in so many of those famous bands. The concept, for anybody who doesn't know, my manager called me about a year and a half ago and said, you know, Jock, most of the Firefall original members played in other famous bands, like the Byrds, the Flying Breeder Brothers, Heart, Spirit, JoJo Gunn, you know, Dan Fogelberg, in my case, Graham Parsons and stuff. Why don't you guys do an album of just their songs? And the light bulb went on in my head, and I went, that's a great idea, but you know what? Let's expand that. In 1976, when our first album hit so big, we toured with just about every best band there was. And I said, so let's also include on songs we do on this album, Fleetwood Mac, the Doobie Brothers,
Marshall Tucker.
Leonard Skinner, Marshall Tucker, Loggins of Messina. So, you know, once the concept was done and we had to pick very carefully, you know, because I remember one time I had no idea what heart song to do, you know, and somebody said, how about Barracuda? And I went, no, that's a heart song. Nobody should do Barracuda, you know. And, you know, Lynn even said when he said the band, oh, great, you guys can do Up on Cripple Creek. And I went, no friggin' way, you know. Levon Helm needs to sing that song. So we had to be picked very carefully. But Steve Weinmeister, who had been in the lead singer in Firefall for 23 years or something, he quit the band for 5 years and then rejoined right before Mark retired. And John Bisaha, who also sings and plays with the Babies, and fortunately for us, they're not very busy, you know, and we and we get to have John on all our touring and stuff. I had suddenly two great lead vocalists. And I'm the third singer in that blend, but I didn't even care if I sang on this darn record. And yeah, I allowed myself to sing three songs, Can't You See and Ooh Las Vegas. Yeah, a couple. But I'll tell you what, Steve and John, so as the producer of this record, I had to be very judicial and go, okay, if John's singing these three, let's see, Steven's going to sing these two and then that one too, you know. So I split it up to make sure that we had a nice vocal range and both of my lead singers felt like they were really contributing what they do. And I'll tell you what, as a producer, for me to have those guys sing a lot of the background vocal parts when there was a lead vocal done, you know, I'd have them, okay, Steve, you sing the high part and John, you sing the low part, and they'd do it. And I'd say, that sounds great, double it. So there'd be four of them. And then I'd say, okay, switch parts. Steve, you go on the bottom and John, you go on top. And then we'd double that. There'd be like eight of them sounding great. And the trick, of course, is to make it sound like two really good background vocalists.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's wonderful. I love the song selection. Long Train Running is one of my favorites. My dad's a huge Doobie Brothers fan, so I grew up. That's a wonderful choice on that.
What do you think of that one?
It's good. John does a great job on it. I think it's wonderful.
Oh, yeah. John sings that great. So a few of the songs on this record, like Fogelberg's Part of the Plan, we kept just like it was supposed to be. And I pretty much played the solo that Dan played because that's the damn solo, you know, play the solo, you know, and on Long Train Running, you know, Tommy Johnson's original main rhythm guitar part is their signature Doobie Brother thing.
Right.
You know, and if you listen to their version, there's a second guitar part in there that's not as prominent as the signature one, but it's a very important part of the song. And I decided to, let's make their number two part be our number one part. Hmm. And we'll kind of take the focus off the signature Tommy Johnson guitar, you know, which is a great part of that song, and you can't do it without that. And then we added saxophone and it just, I really like that version, but that's one of the ones that's a bit different.
It's fun, though. It's a lot of fun.
Sounds great. Well, I will encourage our listeners to check it out for sure.
Yeah. Friends and family, baby.
Friends and family.
There's one question we ask everybody, Jock. You've been a lot of fun. It's been a blast. So yeah, you're on tour either with Firefall or you go out and do solo stuff. Let's say you're on tour and you go into a gas station. What is your gas station snack food of choice? And while you're thinking of your gas station snack food of choice, I'll tell you what I get. I get a Three Musketeers bar. When I was growing up, my mom would say you could have any candy bar you want, and it's the most ounces. So I get a Three Musketeers.
You went by the ounces. I get that.
That's right.
You know
what is John?
My favorite candy bar is not sold everywhere anymore, and it's a Baby Ruth.
Okay.
Oh.
You know? But, you know, if I go into I'm trying to lose weight. I'm an old guy. You know, I got to watch my health. You know, I try to just get gas at gas stations and not buy potato chips or, hey, those cookies look really good.
Well, here's to cheering on your willpower. But next time we see you, we'll toss you a Baby Ruth and we'll hang out. And
okay,
talk
you do that. It's been really fun.
Thank you, man.
We'll see you.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
And that was Jock Bartley of Firefall on the ones and twos. Oh, you crazy cats and jammers.
That's right. Goodness gracious.
man. All right. That's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Great Song Podcast. We have two more episodes until we're done.
No,
is that right?
No, we got a few more.
We got a few more. Okay. Few more. All right. We are coming.
This is middle of November. We'll go into December.
Okay. We're coming up to the end. I had the sequence out of order.
It's all good. We record a little different order than we typically release sometimes.
It's so true. We're just moving things all around, trying to squeeze in as much. You know, I don't know. You guys have noticed, but like, typically a season for us is 20 episodes.
Yeah. This is like 114 episodes.
Exactly. We just went, okay, if we're ending it, we're not going to put a break. We're just going to go all the way up to the end.
So we've been going since February, guys. Yeah. There have been no breaks since February.
Yeah. So definitely the only time we've ever done that.
Yeah.
The longest we've ever done in a season was 25 episodes.
Yeah, that was our first season.
Very first. And then I was like,
We did it a couple times. The first two seasons were 25.
Okay.
And then we adjusted down to 20.
Okay.
I think.
But yeah. And then I was like, I can't do this. I can't do 25.
Rob's running on fumes.
Yeah. So, but now I'm really running on fumes. By the time we hit the end, I'm
pushing him to the end, to the finish line.
It's like a Rocky montage out here right now. You know,
I'm Apollo-ing it, and I'm like, you better catch me.
That's right.
And then Rob speeds past.
And I'm more like just Pauly. I'm Pauly trying to go through the snow, right? R.I.P.
Burt Young. Burt Young this past week.
Passed away this week.
As we record, not as we release.
That's right. So anyway, listen, if you've stuck around to the end here, congratulations. Thanks. Like you deserve something.
All you Firefall fans that are just joining us for the first time,
yeah,
go back and listen to one of your favorite 250 plus to choose from.
If you are a person who's, and I see the analytics, so I know how rare it is that anybody sticks around to the end of an episode, right?
Sure.
I mean, it is extremely rare. If you are the person who is listening to this right now, send us a DM on Instagram or on our, you know, podcast group, Great Songs and the Great People Who Love Them Greatly. Just send us the word Pauly. Okay.
And we'll send you a prize. We will send you something
because you have earned it by listening to the end of this episode.
Congratulations. You're one of the top 1%ers that made it to the end of the video.
That's right.
Kind of motivational thing.
Yes. So, yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. If you didn't make it this far, then you won't hear that congratulations.
But we're still thankful for you,
too. We're still thankful that you were here. Uh-huh. For all of you guys who have been listening so long to the show, thank you so much. We'll see you next week with another great episode. Until then, I'm Rob.
I am JP.
Go listen to some music.